Welcome to Double Dodge, an explicit Guild Ball podcast where your hosts Cam and Dave talk about Guild Ball and Guild Ball related activity until we're either overtaken by catastrophic global warming or we're bored to death of the subject. We're not the best, but we are the dodgiest. Double Dodge, come join the Magical Pants Party. Welcome to Double Dodge. This is an explicit Guild Ball podcast. I'm your host, Dave.
And I'm Cam.
And we have started this podcast to talk about Guild Ball. We are both avid Guild Ball fanatics. We're recent converts. Been playing for about 6 months. We think we've got a little bit to say about the subject. And on that note, we have kicked this experiment off. This is episode one, and we're very glad you can join us. I think by way of introduction, maybe we can sort of talk about how we got into Guild Ball via how we got into gaming more generally. Did you want to kick off, Cam?
Yeah, for sure. So my gaming background, I started very young. I remember the old D&D Red Box. The Red Box. I think that's like half of every gamer's starting point in their career, at least the ones of our kind of vintage. And I remember that. We used to go around to a friend's house. This is when I was probably about eight, and play a lot. They had some older brothers who were very, you know, very good painters, and I kind of just got fascinated by the miniatures and that kind of whole other world thing. My old man's also an avid board gamer, so he loves it so much. He's been to like the World Board Gaming Championship multiple times, I guess I just grew up playing those kind of games. He was more of a war gamer kind of guy, so he loves this kind of historical stuff. I love the fantasy kind of stuff, which is highlighted by a massive box that arrived yesterday of all my latest Zombicide stuff. So, and then, yeah, a couple of years ago, you and I have a mutual friend who kind of introduced us or reintroduced us with getting back into the game, obviously post, you know, study, work, and all the fun stuff, kids, and we started playing War Machine. So that's kind of where we got to. War Machine, we had a, you know, good thrash out for a couple of years, and then we spotted Guild Ball. I think it was last year at the our local state championships. One of our local suppliers of Guild Ball, he put up a prize of the book, and so saw that, did a bit of googling, and yeah, got into it. So and haven't kind of looked back, and I guess neither of you. So
love Guild Ball.
So what's your story, Dave? How did you get into it?
Well, I came via the Red Box as well, but I was like really, really into fighting fantasy books when I was in primary school. So, you know, D&D was the next step. Got into miniature wargaming via Epic. This Games Workshop game, it was kind of Epic Space Marine, like these huge, huge battles against, you know, armies in the Warhammer universe. Played a bit of 40K, played some Warhammer Fantasy, played a lot of Magic the Gathering back in the day. So, you know, like fucking solid nerd credentials here. But I dropped off from
my Magic cards.
No, I don't. But thank you. It's nice that you try. Do you want to buy my War Machine stuff?
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. We might be, we'll set up a trade. I think.
Yeah, that'll be great. But yeah, like you say, got into War Machine after a big hiatus away from tabletop, and man, I just realized how much I loved it. You know, it's a War Machine. Don't play as much anymore. Because Guild Ball, I think, is a much better game. But still love that game. Played it competitively. We both did. Both did, you know, reasonably well, sort of at a local level. And all in on Guild Ball now, because, my God, what a game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love it. And I think probably, and this is where we've discussed it many times, and we know that the designers, you know, Matt and Rich, basically built it, you know, in a similar kind of vein to almost playing like a battle group of war machines. So, you know, it has this really interesting kind of depth of complexity. But it's also faster, and that was probably one of the big appeals to me as well. You know, you and I obviously have, you know, a finite amount of time, and, you know, we can just smash out more games of it, I just find.
Yeah, that's right. And bad backs as well, Campbell. Don't forget that.
Bad. But I'm telling you, the difference between, like, a three-foot board and a four-foot board, seriously, is, like, at least five physio appointments a year.
Yeah, or half a box of Advil.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Two bottles of scotch. Per game.
Yeah. It's the only way to fly. So what have we got lined up for this episode?
So this episode, we're going to chat. One of the segments we're going to do, and we'll do this from time to time, because we've kind of found, you know, what we do every week or every other week is we drive up to our local gaming store. Or gaming club, sorry, not a store. It's at a church. They may sell stuff. Don't know what that is. And it's called Harlequin Halls in Blackwood.
They sell lies.
Hey, look, you know, that's a whole nother podcast. So we drive up there, and one of the segments we're going to do is Carball. We're just going to loosely call it, unless someone wants to tweet us, you know, a funnier name. And it's basically where we do a bit of a cap on, or a not a recap, we do the recap after. We do an intro to what we're going to do tonight in regards to what games we're going to play. We chat about, you know, what we might expect, what the interactions might be. And then, obviously, on the drive home, we then cover the topic of, you know, what happened and did it kind of pan out that way, and just, you know, do a bit of a debrief.
Yeah, and the intention as well is to record some of those games, get them up online so that, you know, if people are interested, they can have a look at them and hurl abuse at us for doing things wrong.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. I love seeing wrong things. I love looking at them like videos and going, oh, that's brilliant tech, and then, like, you know, asking our local pundit, Mr. Tim White, and... Yeah, asking him the question, he goes, no, you can't actually do that, which just usually breaks my heart because it looks like a really good broken rule.
I feel like the internet was made for hurling abuse at people, and I really want to be part of that.
Indeed. The receiving or the giving end of that?
I don't care. I'm versatile.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So what else have we got lined up for this episode?
So I have a chat that I recorded with Trent Dennison, Big Deno. We had a talk about, I guess, moving from an intermediate level of skill to a more advanced level of skill. We talked about a tournament that he played a couple of weeks ago up in Queensland. Played and won, as I think he put it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, not to give anything away. No. And we, you know, it's a bit meandering. We talk about hunters, because I play hunters, and, you know, I find them quite challenging to play. So we talked about that. You know, just general tips on how he sees the game, the way he plays. You know, and I think that's probably a good listen, because I certainly took something away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, for those of you who don't know him, although I'm going to make the assumption that most people in the Gilboiling community have been in the War Machine community in Australia, Deno's a pretty high-ranking gaming person. He's done a lot of good stuff in the War Machine kind of field, and has obviously moved across to Guild Ball. He's part of the Lawyers Guild, I believe. I reckon you could pick him up on the inside of the Season 2 book. So, yeah, he's got a lot to say, always, but it's quite intelligent, and the depth of knowledge is pretty good. So, yeah, no, definitely listen.
Yeah, and we sort of jokingly talk about him being a bit of a divisive figure. And, you know, he does polarise opinion, but... I would just like to say ahead of that interview that he is very generous with his time. He does want to see people, you know, improve their game, and he's really happy to share his knowledge. And I think that's that's a wonderful thing.
I've heard he's been schooling you lately in the art of Deno.
He has been flogging me on Vassal. It's a little bit depressing, but you know, I take the view that you've got to take your lumps to get better. You know,
if you lose, don't lose the lesson.
Don't lose the lesson.
Brilliant. Damn.
So, and I think the intention is we're going to try and line up a chat with, I guess, players who are playing at the top of their guild, have some insight into the game, and I've got Dan Cam, notable Australian morticians player, lined up for a future episode. He's already said that he'd like to come on and have a chat. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
So, no, that'll be good. So that's kind of, I guess, the format of what we'll be, you know, doing. Every episode, we haven't obviously decided on how long the episodes are going to be, time permitting, you know, how big the interval is between episodes. Time permitting, we're both busy men, but also we love our Guild Balls. So hopefully it'll be every couple of weeks, but we'll be putting it out through various channels. And at that point, we'll actually just quickly give a plug. So our website is how you would have found it, but doubledodge.com.au. Also, we have a couple of sponsors, Dave.
Yes, we do. Our first and best sponsor, he's a man who we both love dearly. He's
indeed.
He deals our Guild Ball crack. He delivers it to your house like all the best dealers.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a man, what a legend. Yeah. Daryl Latterman from Nirvana Games.
So I think his URL is nirvanagamessa.com. And yeah, for all your Guild Ball crack needs, jump on there. I think one of the other ones I was going to mention is my own business, because I'm going to be supplying stubby holders to for various comedy events and routines of things like the tournament we've got coming up. So it's soupcan.com.au, shameless plug, and we basically do stubby holders. What we'll be doing is creating some for Double Dodge and then giving them out as random prizes, like for, you know, funny tweets that people have done for us. Other things like that. So, yeah, good feedback.
You've also got a sideline in 2D terrain as well, as I understand it.
Indeed, indeed. I think you might have to chat to Big Daryl about that. I'm simply the supplier in the chain. I'm the man that's you know, in the crack lab, you know, boiling it up, handing it out to him for him to on sell. Yep.
He is your Mr. White. No, that's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. So I reckon we will get into it. We've got Carball up first,
yep.
Followed by a chat with Deno, and then we'll jump back on to say goodbye to everybody. And let's get into it.
Fantastic.
All right, man. So what do we got?
So I think we thought we'd do a bit of a prelude to a game that I've got going on tonight, a Smoke v Esters, and see what's going to happen.
And this is interesting, because Esters could be perceived as a hard counter to Smoke.
So stupidly I want to actually experience that and see how bad the counter is. And I've dojoed, you know, the shit out of it and seen what'll kind of work and what won't, so I've had a few ideas there.
Alright, so what are your ideas, Cam? Actually, before you go into that, we should maybe say who you're playing.
Yes, as in the person?
As in the person.
The person, Daryl. Daz from Big
Nirvana Games.
Yep, I think it's nirvanagamessa.com.
Yeah, he doesn't know this, but he's going to be sponsoring this podcast. Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. Oh, well, look, we've talked to him. Well, you know, he can give us free stuff. That's fine.
He's a generous dude. Like, I think he sponsored the national event last year. He's done a bunch of local stuff.
He sponsored the last tournament. He'll be sponsoring the next tournament, which we can probably talk about now as well. It's Blessing the Scumfather. Up at Harlequin Halls. That's our local kind of hangout in Blackwood, South Australia, Adelaide. And we've got that on the 30th of July, I believe. So
yep.
For a bit of another local one. Hopefully you can win that one too.
Back to back. So, Esters.
Esters. So I'll tell you my standard Smoke lineup and what I'm kind of expecting. And then, maybe a few options, things I've thought about. So usually when I rock out Smoke, and most people will do this, it's Smoke, Flask, then Calculus, Mercury, Vitriol, because, you know, having another striker is awesome. Smoke's an awesome striker. an insane kind of threat range. And so then you've got the sixth spot. Now, usually I'll use Decimate for that. Decimate's really good for just straight up, you need momentum, whatever you put, whatever influence you put on Decimate, you get it back in momentum generally and just deals damage. 4-1 defense is always pretty good too, but in this matchup, I'm kind of thinking that it might be, I might not want to go in melee-centric with them. Brewers obviously just beat the fuck out of most people. So, you know, how do I kind of approach that? So I was kind of thinking more of a ranged game.
Yeah, and I guess the tricky thing, you know, like the Alchemists play a great ranged game, particularly under smoke. But the tricky thing with Estus is her heroic play, which is Soothing Voice. And it is a bit of a 1-2 punch for Alkies, because not only does it heal the models affected, but it removes conditions as well. And I mean, as an alchemist, you really want to play that damage over time game with your conditions.
Yeah, I've had to think about that. Like, I think it's going to come down to how, and this is obviously going to roll out on the table, hence why I want to play it, how or what partner turn that Estus will go. Now, I reckon she'll probably go early, because she generally wants to dish out the buffs. So she's got, and you can probably help me out with, I think it's her Empowered
Voice. Empowered Voice, yep. So speed buff, +2/+2 move, strength buff, which is +1 damage to playbook damage results, and agility, which is a def buff, +1 def.
Yeah, so she's going to want to dish that out, and then she'll obviously try to pop the heroic at the same time. And I reckon it's going to be a matter of, okay, seeing when that happens. Now, the way smoke plays, obviously, it's usually kind of late turn. So you want to be, like, conditioning people right at the end of the turn, so that then, you know, tough hide models, things like that, will suffer the condition, fall, you know, into the next turn, and then they'll start.
And so they don't have a chance to clear it off either.
Exactly. So I think that's probably the way I'm going to play it. I'm guessing Estus will go early, and so it'll be negating the healing. So this is where it comes into what is the other, my sixth model. And what I was thinking, and it'd be an interesting one, and probably what I'll play tonight, is a Venom. So I figure I need to be able to either condition faster than what Estus is actually taking off, or basically just sit back and kind of keep lobbing and play a real football game. Now, he's got a decent kick. You don't generally kick with him. But I figure if I can get the poison game in there, and then have him activate either second to last or last, and smoke doing the opposite. The poison's already on them. Run in, you bust his heroic out and get bleed on them as well. If Estus is already gone, you're not going to be clearing that. You're talking now 5 points for each of them. So even if he uses his heroic to clear all that, you've still dealt 5 points, and I'm guessing they're going to be clumped up. So that's multiplied across a whole bunch of models. Yep.
Yeah, so you're kind of doubling down on the condition game a little bit by throwing the bleed in there as well. You know, like how do you... Because the Alchemist stuff, you know, it can be a bit fragile if you can get something capable to it. How do you think you're going to deal with, I guess, their close-up game? I mean, they're famed for being able to punch whole teams into the dirt.
Yeah. So I've had a look at the threat ranges. And a lot of them cap out at somewhere around 10 or 11 when you include... 9 to 11. 11 when you actually include Estus' buff. And that's a singular model. So I'm going to basically try to play that range game. When you throw out a AoE, so you know, you're talking Calculus and Mercury, you've got your 8 inches plus you get 1.5 inch... for the centre of the AoE kind of distance you're gaining on that. So you're talking 9.5. If I can be really smart about how far away I play, I might be able to be tagging that, and then, like, for the fire one, for example, sitting it right in front of them so that they've got to come through it and slow themselves down. And, you know, basically slowing them down that way, keep kind of pinging it off, and that's where then Vitriol is going to be just chasing the ball, so not doing any beat stick work, but just chasing the ball around. And smoke can also kind of eye off when it's time to, you know,
go in there, do the smoke thing. Slot a good one.
Yeah. I mean, smoke just scores from anywhere, just about.
I'd fucking hate playing into smoke. Hate her. And particularly playing hunters into smoke, it just feels like... I mean, I'm not a very good hunters player, but You know, it just feels like you're playing this losing momentum game where you're just trying to desperately clear stuff off. You're trying to get your own stuff up as hunters, which costs momentum, like Blessings of the Sunfather.
Yeah.
And it's just such a drain. But, you know, like, I think that that fire debuff is always good. And I know that that Estus has a fire AoE that she can use as well. Does that help you? I mean, what I don't know how to play smoke. Well, I don't know much about it. But
so smoke can't move anyone, or can't affect other other teams' AoEs. So it doesn't change that. I mean, I did toy with the idea of you throw out Mercury's early on, even if there's no target, you basically place it out there, and then smoke can do go out and. Do the chemical mix or our chemical mix and duplicate it multiple times to basically spread it like almost a firewall in front of you.
Mm.
So I was toying with that idea. I think it'll really, and this is hence why it's, you know, an interesting matchup, it'll come down to, you know, how the table's laid out, how the game's rolling out, what position I'm in. I mean, there will be a point at which I have to engage because I don't think I'd score, unless I was playing Mist as the sixth spot. I don't think I'm going to score 3 goals.
So, what's your full team look like?
As in an 8 or just the 6?
Both, I guess.
So, yeah, it'll be Smoke and then Flask, obviously. I made the mistake last night when I played you of thinking about playing Naja, and Flask with the Cloud is just... I do not see why you wouldn't play Flask with Smoke.
Mm.
So then the other four before, well, the other six for the 8, Mercury Calculus, I think you'd be silly if you didn't, just that's how Smoke plays, Vitriol, so there's 3, and then the other 3, which I'd pick one from, would be Venom, Decimate, when he comes out, Veteran Catalyst. We've done a bit of, obviously, testing with him, he's pretty cool. Can go down like a sack of potatoes, but generally
can also like lay the smack down, yeah. Like nothing else.
Free charges are awesome,
and bonus VP if he gets the takeout.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, playing him, I reckon that you want to play for that late game, so you almost want to sit him back like a goalkeeper. He's on a 50 mil base. I reckon I was playing with the idea of sitting him in front of the goals and basically just as a goalkeeper until right at the end where he threats 10 inches anyway with a free charge, then you just come in and smack something in the face.
Yeah, I love Furious models. I just love it.
And so instead of him, because obviously he's not out, I thought about Hemlock. So Hemlock can then just add that third AoE throwing plus also a condition removal.
Yep.
It's one that I reckon would play well into the matchup you and I played last night, which was
Fillet,
because Fillet just, I mean, as an Alchemist player, I hate conditions on me.
Yep.
Which is kind of ironic.
Yeah, that's dramatic irony right there. Beautiful.
Well, and it also teaches you to deal with it. Obviously, everyone else when they play against me has to, but when you're not used to it, you soon learn that it just drains your momentum on yourself and hunters.
Mm. Yeah, and keeping bleed around in a fillet game is just never a good idea. Oh. You know, just the threat extension, the damage buff that it gives her.
What? So fillet starts with 6, right? I know this is a bit of a tangent.
Yeah.
So you then charge and get off the one of her 2 character players, which basically caused them to be bleeding. Yeah. You're then hitting TAC 8, is it?
Yeah, so Pain Circle triggers 1 damage and a 3-inch pulse off the target model, which causes bleed on everything within that 3 inches. Yeah, then you're hitting TAC 8 and plus 1 damage on the playbook due to her character trait. So you've
got 4 more after that. You've already done 2.
And she hits a momentous 2 on the 3, I think it is.
So that's momentous 3 effectively, so 4 through 12. So you can do 14 damage relatively reliably.
She's brutal. She's brutiful.
Brutiful.
She's brutiful.
She's so brutiful. just like Trent Denison.
Yeah, well, I mean...
He's brutiful.
Yeah.
So, I haven't thought too much, and you might be able to give us more insight into the Estus game. You've played into...
I've played into Estus once with Hunters.
Yeah.
And I played a really poor game got sucked into, I guess, the Brewers, you know, scrum, and just got beat into the dirt. And the thing I found particularly difficult was that Hunters do rely on Snared both to help land their character plays and also to boost playbook damage on models like for Hard and Cena. And yeah, like her ability just to clear that off and whatever kind of incidental damage you might have done through things like poison, Egret's poison, it really just does take away their ability to sort of go in for that final kill on a model. And then, you know, the Hunters aren't great in a straight fight either, so I found her quite a challenging captain to play into.
What models did he play? What was the lineup roughly? Hooper.
Yeah, Hooper. Friday in particular was like a standout player. She's just, man, she's such a good model. So fast, like effectively, 410 kick with her heroic up.
Yeah, so it's a rotate. Yeah.
You know, Spigot. I think he had Stave as well. Like, I know Daryl likes to play Stave because, you know, he loves that range knockdown. I mean, I don't, you know, Stave's a bit iffy.
He plays it an interesting way too. He uses it almost like the harpoon. So he'll often lob it over the back of something and try to
push
it back towards them, which is pretty clever given how slow the Brewers can be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a nice reposition, isn't it? Like, and it sets his guys up perfectly.
Yeah, I fell into that, I reckon, last tournament. He got a nice lob barrel off.
Man, Daryl's legit. He's a fucking tough player.
No, it'll be a good game. Might do a recap after and see what happened, and I'll cry my salty tears of shame.
Yeah, so, like, as an Alchemist player, actually have an international counterpart in Mary from the Kickoff podcast.
Oh, shout out to Mary.
Yep.
I believe are you her? Well, sorry, in honour to her, we need to mention Midas at least once. I believe that's just part of the criteria.
Is this where we both just say Midas and leave it at that?
Alright, yeah.
Midas. Yep. That works. And of course, her boyfriend Gabe is my nemesis.
Oh, really?
He is, yeah. It's a recent thing.
Oh, brilliant. Have you been sending her penguin pictures?
Yeah, I sent her a penguin picture.
Brilliant.
Yeah, wow, brilliant. Man, this rain's coming down. So, driving in the car up to Blackwood. Blackwood is in the Adelaide Hills, which are beautiful. But it is dark and wet and foggy, so that's the background noise that you can hear.
So if you hear a crash, this might be our first and last podcast. But,
yeah, but hey, one and done, baby, one and done. So I reckon I'll play some Fillet tonight.
Fillet? So who's going to be there? We'll probably have Michael, Tim. Tim, who is a part of the Lawyers Guild.
Tim Wyatt, what a fucking legend that
guy is. He is an absolute legend. Anytime you want to ask him an annoying question, ask me to ask him, because I just love annoying him. But he's always got an answer for me, even if he's working. So he usually busts out some Masons.
Yep, he plays a tight Masons game.
Mm.
But we're in the process of growing the meta up here.
Yep.
And I don't know, how many players we got in SA, would you say?
Well, last tournament was 13, I believe.
13, yeah.
I think if you ask Daryl, there's probably, we get upwards towards 18 if we get everyone in. I keep trying to convert War Machine people. Every time I walk into Harlequin Halls, which is actually a gaming club, so anyone's allowed to play anything, but some people still feel they need to be playing War Machine.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like Scientology at that point. That's my take on it.
Well, we're just about to roll in, if I don't crush us before then. So maybe we chat about what happened afterwards and give a bit of a recap and hopefully some knowledge on how to not get your dick kicked in by Esters or vice versa.
Excellent. All right, Team Penguin. Right.
Oh, I'm dark, man.
What happened?
I got my shit pushed in.
So what'd you play in? Who'd you play into?
Filler into Obulus playing a fucking fat boy lineup. And Filler just bounced off that meat wall.
So that's all the big guys. So Fangtooth.
Fangtooth, Casket, Ghast, Silence, Obulus, obviously, and Dirge.
And they just scrummed it in the middle and...
Yeah, I think it was a combination of, like, poor decisions on my part and some critical things not going my way, so...
So, in hindsight, you think you've got to play, like, a football-y kind of game against...
Yeah, absolutely. Or? Like, you just... You cannot... Or a long condition game. Like, throw out bleed at the end of the turn and let that do the damage and then pick your weakened target off.
Yeah, it's probably not a bad idea because you don't then get the... you don't have to spend the extra one against Ghast because
yeah.
you're targeting him.
Yep, but I got one takeout and I missed a four dice shot on goal with Brisket. So the score was 12-2.
Oh no!
Shameful
display.
So let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you.
Oh my word! Well, it's not a matchup I probably want to play that much. So this is the smoke into Esters. In the end, I just. Dark Horse and thought I'd try extra activation Avarice and Greed in that 6 slot. Turns out into Esters. Avarice does very much, very little, sorry, very much nothing. He, so what happened? First turn, kicked the ball to me. I messed around, made sure I got momentum with throwing out AoEs. But I kind of killed the ball a little bit and just held onto it. Went last with smoke, but at this point he'd tooled up Esters and done her plus one damage and threw a fire and a blast earth and basically did four damage to two models on the outside and tagged one in the middle with both of them and did eight damage, which was really untidy. That was Mercury. So then I knew I was going to win the turn. I was up by three momentum with a few passes. So I jumped smoke over him, drifted some AoEs, got some conditions out, and then put smoke in a position that I could score next turn. And won the roll. Smoke did her thing, cloud jump, charge to get one momentum, has a shot at goal, four dice, misses. Ugh. And so then, and it's probably my cardinal rule of not moving smoke up and trying to score the first goal with her.
Yep.
Because as soon as you do that, you then lose all the momentum you generate from your ranged AoEs.
Yep.
So, yeah. And then it turned into a bit of a scrum where I was just trying to pick off. He surrounded smoke with every one of his models. Couldn't kill her. I'd done enough to the cat scum that I then won the next momentum roll. Turn roll. And I shadow jumped out. Legendary on to scum and punched him, killed him, and then managed to poison all the guys that were standing around to smoke, which nice. Is just that cloud jumper, sorry, is just unbelievable.
Yes, yeah.
So did that, backed off, and then I really had to play a game where I had to sit off them, and it's so counterintuitive. Like at one point I ran away with Avarice just so he stayed alive and didn't feed momentum and allow them to kill him.
Yeah, see, that was a mistake that I made. Or I think my Avarice got bogged down, and oh my god, it is because you want him in there, and you like he soaks a shit ton of damage.
Yeah, and you feel like oh, I've got two influence on him, I should be charging in. Whereas sometimes, and this is what I learned, it's just better to run away.
Yep.
And you're also negating them the momentum. So I started playing this distance game, which was kind of what I talked about, but it's a lot harder to actually do when you try to do it. Because you're so used to just, like I've played a bit of Hammer, Veteran Rage, and you just charge into people and do heaps of damage, and it's just opposite to that.
Yeah, I think it's like, with that, like Avarice's ability to put singled out on something means that a model over the course of multiple activations should die, like the target should die. But yeah, it's really about minimizing how much you're going to take back. Man, I had like a knockdown Avarice tonight, and I think there were four across Ghast and then Fangtooth. There were four or five unleashed. It was just
oh god.
Man, Unmasking, sorry.
Unmasking.
Yeah.
So put him in the dirt with...
Yeah, it was just like fucking sad times. Anyway, I'm crying. I'm crying on the inside.
Sad, man. I mean, it's, I just found it really difficult to, and this is probably what your experience is, to play that keep you off game. Like, in hindsight, I'd actually, I've probably learnt what I would play into Esters. I actually dropped Avershin Green, put Mist in, play double striker on the outside, on the wings.
Just double down on football.
Yeah, and then you've got Smoke to cover that middle section, because I kind of ended up with Smoke covering the right flank and Vitriol on the left. And Vitriol's great at just popping in at whoever's around there, getting momentum, punching a bit, and then looking for a takeout.
Yep.
The best bit was it came down to, what was it, 6-8. Friday had the ball in my half, kind of in the middle. I basically had 3 or 4 models within Friday's distance, and she had enough to basically, within Friday's distance that had not much health left. She basically was setting up for the kill and the goal. So 6-point activation. I charged with Vitriol, so smoke bomb, charge, with a glide to get across some rough ground, get her in, get the tackle on one, then pass over the top of Esther's, so because I didn't have line of sight to Smoke, who was still in range of goal, I had to roll a 5, so 4 dice, roll a 5, I then got my second momentum to then basically snapshot, and so I basically had a 4 dice, 50-50 snapshot, and scored that for the win. So,
yeah, nice.
So it was a good way, but...
So what was the score in the end?
So it was 12-6, because Friday obviously was going to go next, so...
Yep.
Most of my models were on half health or less, other than Vitriol, who was full, because she just played up a wing. So yeah, no, it was good, but... Yeah, it's a bad matchup, I reckon, for
So did that healing and condition removal come into play?
Good point. Yes. I think the distance... So, yeah, he did it a few times, but what I would do is then wait, and this is where, when in the activation... Or when in the turn, sorry, that Estus activates. If he went early to kind of strip it off, like the fire off, then I'd chuck a poison down and then drift it on across them again.
Yep.
So it was negating the damage side of things, because you get that +2 heal. But conditions, I was able to... I mean, I basically had a condition on every one of his models most of the game.
So would you say it was forcing him to spend that, like, that one momentum to pop the heroic every turn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because first turn he went to do it, and I played off him. I kept off, and he couldn't do it. Every one of his models had a condition on him.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, and to be honest, that probably played into the dice roll of who goes first, because each time I was either even or I was 1 or 2 momentum in front for the roll-off.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a good place to be. Like, it's... Like, I think when you see momentum scores like that, when they're even or up by 1 or 2, it's probably an indication of how tight the game is.
Yeah. Oh, it was definitely... I mean, it's basically one or two activations in it. If I don't do that with Vitriol, I'm pretty stuffed at that point, because I only had 1 or 2 influence around the place. I had a Mercury on 5 near the goal that he could probably get into on Friday. Yeah, it was
so my big takeaway tonight, having played a lot of Obulus, is that fuck, I hate playing into Obulus. That guy is a fucking prick.
He's broken.
He is he's very good. He's untouchable. He's an influence battery. Him and Silence together, like... So Michael was saying just before we left, 3 big guys all bringing 1 influence. That team is still running at, what is it, 13?
12
influence?
Yeah, 12.
Jesus.
Because they bring 8 between them, and then he's got 4
for the rest.
1.
That's great. And, you compare that to a Hunter's team where if you take Cena, if you take that 10 influence Hunter's team,
You just
feel like, what the fuck is going on? How do I do this?
Yeah, and as soon as one of your momentum generating attacks or abilities, like your Sunstrike and then a Pinned, and you miss it, and all of a sudden there goes the extra, 2 momentum for whatever the blessing would have given you.
Yeah, so I don't agree with Gabe from TKO on much, but I will agree that Theron does have some pretty glaring holes in his game.
So I think we were chatting about it the other day. What would you actually do to Theron? I mean, I tossed out the idea of just giving him the ability to bless himself.
Yeah, that could help. It might... Because then he's spending one MP to generate three influence effectively, though, so... You know, that might be...
But it puts him into the realms of some of the other captains that basically can, you know, like a tapper that just spends one momentum for two influence and, you know, then kicks someone's head in. You know, those kind of...
Yeah, yep.
So, I don't know, I just think the blessing, because then it has that chain effect, and if it doesn't happen, like if you don't get the pinned or whatever to then get a blessing onto someone else, then it breaks the chain, whereas with him, you could give him... three total instead of trying to give him four or five even. He sunstrikes himself. You shoot off a arrow to the knee instead of a pin just to get the one momentum. And then you bless yourself to get a pin. And so you effectively get six influence for three. And I reckon that might just put him in a high, you know, high enough power level.
I think you you could buy yourself some illegal fireworks and you get some duct tape. And you basically just see how high you can launch that guy.
He's that good.
Yeah, maybe that's too good for him. I don't know.
So you're not going to be playing Hunters anytime soon?
Oh, no, I really like them. I think they're a good team. They're a lot of fun to play. I think there's something very cinematic about having a bear just, you know, charge across a field and gore a bunch of people to death.
Eat someone.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, it's... it helps me sleep at night when I pull off one of those big Cena kills.
I thought you were going to say you put like Cena on your mantle or beside your bed just to guard over you, like some kind of spirit animal.
Well, I mean, we all have our rituals, right?
Oh, look, I'm not sure I want to know.
Yeah. fair enough. Probably edit this bit out. Oh, that's good, man. Like, it sounds like you your game plan played out like you hoped it would.
It played out. I think Avarice and Greed were probably a bit of a mistake. I don't know. I like the extra activation. It meant that I got that final activation in turn one. But, yeah, in hindsight, you can't take Decimate because Decimate just gets beaten up by them all. Yep. So you might get a few momentum, but they'll get more. So
yeah, she's pretty squishy, isn't she?
Well, squishy enough that when they're going to play the middle of the board, you've just got to play around the outside of them. And I think, yeah, Mist would play really well into that. So, you know, you're threading goals from every angle.
And that Def 5 and 2-inch melee is good as well.
Yeah, exactly. If you need to, you can just pop in, punch one of the people in the outer. Obviously, they're going to be more like your Spigots and your Fridays as opposed to the, you know, Hooper. So we played Hooper, Mash, Esther Scum, Spigot Friday. So... pretty standard kind of lineup. I mean, Mash is actually a really good one for holding the ball. So he's got a 2-inch melee with unpredictable.
Unpredictable. Yeah. That's huge, isn't it?
And when he's within three, I guess, of Esther's, I think it's three, he's plus one armor. So he goes to 3-2. So it was a situation where I was going to cloud jump over him and then punch him. But attack four from smoke. Punching and you're already losing two dice and I need two successes. I basically need to get success on all four dice to be able to get the tackle.
Attack four is not good.
So that's probably, I mean, and probably why smoke is attack four, because otherwise she'd be really good.
Yeah. Where's her tackle? Is it on two?
Tackle's on two. And that's
you just said that, didn't you?
I don't know. It's late. You know, we've got kids. This is the way it is.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Tired.
Yeah. Kids, heroin habits. Yeah. We'll take it out of you.
Hey, well, we played at church. It all kind of lights up, doesn't it?
Man, I just want to expunge the memories of tonight from my mind. I'm very happy for you.
Thank you.
You know, well done.
I think, to be fair, I was pretty lucky at the end to get that. I mean, I had to roll... five on four dice. We need moops to do the numbers on this. Five on four dice, and then, yeah, basically a straight snapshot. So two successes on four dice, which is, I'm assuming...
Not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's chancy. 50-50. But still, if it wins you the game, you take it every time, right?
Well, it wins you the game, and the ball had to be somewhere else, so...
Yep. Yep, that's some pretty good thinking there. Do I want to win the game?
Yes. If answer is yes, go towards goal.
Yeah. Well, yes. I don't know. I think I'll stick with Philip for a while. See.
Philip's pretty good.
I don't know. I've been playing on Vassal a lot.
Yeah.
And any time I don't play Deno, I tend to win. But every time I play Deno, like, you know, a couple of very close games, and I think I'm starting to get the hang of it. But you know what tonight showed me was that you need to pick your targets with her.
Yeah.
You know, you need to make use of the condition damage that she can do in some matchups. Well, in all matchups, but you know, in a match where you are going to get knocked down and have to slog through between like 17 and 29 boxes, does Fang Tooth have?
Yeah, 29.
You know, she's not going to be able to do it in one turn, and then she's stuck. So
well, he's gluttonous, so he eats the first one.
He really does.
Yeah.
He loves it. He loves it. No, he's a great model.
Well, on that note, we'll maybe do another one in a week or so and see what other, maybe look at another kind of matchup that we want to see kind of happen. You and I maybe even play each other that way, you know. Well, you know, one of us is happy.
I'm gonna hunt Michael down and fucking exact my vengeance. Because I'm salty.
Too easy. All right. Take it easy as where Dave gets out of the car.
Woo!
And I drive home. Off into the sunset.
All right.
Take it easy, man.
Nicely done. Good to see you, man.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, hey.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
Good.
That's good. So, yeah, no, thanks for doing this. This is nice of you. I appreciate it.
Fuck up, mate.
Fuck up. You just can't handle human kindness, can you? You don't deal well with it. You don't deal well with it. Have you seen Game of Thrones tonight?
No, mate. You know, I told you last week, I haven't been watching any of it. I'm waiting till I can watch it all in one big...
In one go. Hit. Fuck.
Yeah.
It takes incredible
willpower.
Yeah, I bet it does. And also some pretty intense hiding from the internet, I would imagine.
Oh, look, I sort of do my best to hide from spoilers, but I'm not a guy that gets overly worried about spoilers.
Mm.
If someone tells me what happens in a book, I'm okay with it generally.
Mm. Would you say you're a guy who doesn't get overly worried about much, Deno?
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah. All right, so I'm gonna start with three questions. This is part of our shtick. Three questions put to you, Deno. The first question is, do you have anything you'd like to say to Gabe from TKO?
Gabe, my very good friend, it's been many, many years since we spoke. By many years, I mean never. And I'd just like to say to you, long live the penguin. Mm,
Wise, friendly words.
Thank you.
My second question is, I think I saw you tweet the other day that Nipsa's crown has slipped. He's yesterday's hero. Would you like to draw a comparison between Nipsa and Ramsay Bolton?
Well, for starters, Nips was never the king of Australian Guild Ball, so very similar to Ramsay in that sense.
Mm.
He thought he was better than he was, which is also very Ramsay-esque. And yeah, I think it's almost an identical parallel between those two people.
Mm-hmm. He's certainly a notorious sausage borrower. I think that's been said by a number of people now.
He does enjoy fondling the sausages, old Nipsey.
Mm. My third question to you is it's a comment and then a question. So James Morehouse, you and he are friends, good friends, have been friends for a long time.
Bosom buddies, yes.
I've noticed recently that James has taken up marathon running. He likes to run.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is he running from love?
No, he's not running from love. He's running towards the many, many opportunities that are provided by being as incredibly good looking as he is.
Mm. He's really a dynamite package, isn't he? He packs a lot into that small frame.
Mate, he's the whole guy. He's a triple threat, that guy.
Right.
Can run. Can play a musical instrument and is just an absolute weapon at the toy soldiers. So, triple
wonderful,
threat.
Wonderful. Well, that concludes the question section. I'd like to move on to perhaps the meat and potatoes of the reason we've got you on here.
Sure.
And I thought we'd talk to you about moving from an intermediate level of play to a more advanced level of play, like some common mistakes that you may have noticed that people make. You know, any other general observations you may care to share. But also the tournament that you played on the weekend, played and won, I believe.
Played for and got. Yep, mm-hmm. Lovely.
Whether you'd like to talk about that as well, you know, maybe we can just throw it over to you and you can freestyle it and we'll see where it goes.
Sure. Look, I think I will sort of briefly touch on a few things. Like when I play down at the local game shop most Thursday nights, some Saturdays, and I try to play against a mixture of people, not always just playing against, you know, the same people. And oftentimes that'll mean you'll play against players that are sort of newer. And I always try to, I guess, give them tips and, you know, maybe show them some things that they can do differently. And there is some legitimately common mistakes that I think people make early on, and that translates a lot. And that's the biggest one for me, is just not going into a turn with a concrete plan. When I sit down at a table and start, you know, a turn, planning out a turn, you basically plan out the turn in your mind, and it kind of works like a tree. So your first activation, assuming you've won momentum, is obvious, and there's nothing that can happen to alter that activation, unless home crowd's been played or you're playing season one and Don't Touch the Hair exists, which is still something you can account for. But yeah, so you basically have to think about the order that you're going to activate your team in. If your first activation is locked in stone, what you then have to do is try and figure out what their activation is going to be in response to that, and then try and allocate your influence in a way that will give you the maximum momentum. Someone said, I can't remember who it was, but that I think it was on, I think it might have been Alex Hall, actually, on Who Cares Who Wins podcast. He said that he tries to generate a momentum for every influence that he has allocated. And if he hasn't sort of hit that mark in a turn of influence to momentum allocation, then he's probably not being as effective as he can with his turn. So, you know, like the momentum race is something that you should be thinking about from the first activation in a turn. So your first activation is, I kill this guy, you know, I do this, whatever. But you then need to think, okay, so how do I leverage that momentum lead? Can I use that to put down counterattacks? Can I use that to defensive stance, which is going to neuter their momentum generation? You know, can I use both of those things to try and completely stop their influence generation, turning into momentum, etc.? And basically use that to try and build your turn. It's not an easy thing to teach, I guess. if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. But building a plan from the first activation and going from there.
Yeah, your point about momentum generation, when to spend it as well, you know, when to make that counterattack, when to call defensive stance, you know, and you may end up down by one or two in the race over the course of a turn, but it's those decisions that can really swing a turn for you in terms of winning initiative. I've certainly noticed that playing against people, and I've noticed when I've gone, all right, I'll make a counterattack, then realizing that, you know, actually it's completely futile. You know, either the player attacking me has a dodge, has a knockdown, or some other way to mitigate whatever I might be trying to do with my counterattack.
Yeah.
Realizing that actually I've probably just lost initiative as a result of a bad call.
Yeah. Wasting momentum is just the worst thing you can do. And the only way that you can avoid that is by knowing exactly what the other playbooks are. And this is probably the other thing that you can do to really step up, is to know the stats and rules for every model in the game.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, it's study, isn't it? It's a dedication to, you know, getting that knowledge and making use of it.
If you want to compete at a high level in any field, that requires dedication, and that requires time, and that requires investment of time. And this is absolutely no different. If you want to be top class at Guild Ball, or any miniature war game or any field, you have to devote time to practicing and learning all of the things you need to know.
So, I mean, that's an interesting point. You know, in the context of where you guys went with War Machine last year, I think it was. You know, what are you planning on doing with Guild Ball? I mean, are you, you know, pretty intent on competing at an international level, sort of getting over to the UK and playing there? I mean, is that part of it, or have you kind of burned out on, you know,
I'm not really looking to compete in Guild Ball the way that I did in War Machine. But what I've found is that I just sort of naturally fall into that methodology of playing, which is I research a lot and I learn a lot of things, and I go balls deep on pretty much anything I do. And so
I'm going to take that out of context. I'm going to use that quote everywhere.
Please do. I go balls deep all the time, mate.
Okay.
But I find myself sort of doing that same amount of time and research and, you know, stuff that I did for War Machine into Guild Ball and sort of having similar results, you know, because of that. So, but look, for me, Guild Ball is just about having a, you know, a fun time, and it's a great game. It's a lot of fun. So, you know, all my mates are playing it, so we're just having a good time.
So no, just to change tack slightly.
Yeah.
Do you prefer Trent or Trenton? Is Trenton in fact your name?
Trenton is actually my name. It was given to me by my my Viking ancestors. So Trenton would be preferable, but Trent is an abbreviated version of that, and most people just call me that now.
Mm. So just to follow on from that question, when you fly, do you have to book an extra seat for your ego?
No.
That came in through Twitter. Somebody asked that question.
It comfortably fits in. You have Twitter followers? I'm impressed by that. Well done.
Well, I had like three. So
yeah, good effort.
Two of those are me.
One of them's Campbell.
Yeah. We're backing ourselves, mate. We're backing ourselves. Yeah.
No, my ego fits in a little handbag.
Hmm. Because you're something of a controversial figure. I mean, you know, you've managed to alienate. You've managed to alienate whole continents of people, or at least, you know, parts of that. I mean, I know like Florida is up in arms against you at the moment.
Mate, it's a gift.
Yeah, I think they called a fatwa. why don't you talk about your tournament? How did that go?
Yeah, it was good. So one of the other podcasts, which is Protect Your Balls, asked me to come on and talk about Veteran Rage because I've been playing Union recently.
Right.
And so Simon said, can you please play Veteran Rage at the tournament so that you'll be able to talk about him? And so I said, sure, Simon, knowing that Simon's real reason for wanting me to play Veteran Rage was because he can't beat my Blackheart team. So I was like, that's fine, Simon, you know, you can couch it in whatever reason you want, but we all know the truth. So I played Veteran Rage. Sort of talk about it a little bit on the Protect Your Balls podcast, but to sort of summarize the team and the tournament itself, I played a list that had two different teams built into it, into a roster, which was a scoring team and an Achille team. And the reason I did that is because Blackheart is extremely flexible, and you can sort of play that two different styles with Blackheart just shifting it up himself. But with Rage, you are sort of locked into a very specific style of sort of melee and getting in and winning the fight through that method. And I found that was a very one-dimensional gameplay, and so I needed to play a more flexible style by choosing players that can do that. So the teams basically were Snakeskin and Mist and Decimate were in the goal-scoring team, which was with Avarice and Greed, who make every team, because they're all... and then I had Gutter and Harry the Hat to sub in for the fighting team. And a lot of people give Harry a bad rap, but I think he's actually quite good with Veteran Rage because it allows you to leverage that same thing we were talking about before, which is momentum. And when you've got two models in your roster that both have Rising Anger, it's basically two momentum without making an attack, which can be very potent.
But would you say both in terms of resource generation, like defensive resource generation, and also as a deterrent?
Well, it's a deterrent, but often people either forget about it or sort of still think it's worth doing. And And that's fine, but when you can win a momentum race with Veteran Rage and have him activate first in a turn, and when you have Avarice and Greed and you can use that extra activation to set up the next turn, as in put a model in to engage someone, Veteran Rage is just an absolute murder machine. There is very few models in the game that he will not kill with a free charge and his legendary up. So the trick with using him effectively is setting it up the previous turn. And in a lot of ways, the two Rising Anger models really allow you to do that. So unfortunately I didn't actually get to play any fighting games. I had to play all scoring games because of my three games that I played were against Fishermen twice and Alchemists once. So against Fish, they never do damage. So Harry the Hat's basically wasted. And against the Alchemists, yeah, they sometimes do damage, but often they'll go for Momentous Push Dodges or, Momentous Clones. And Harry is also quite slow and is vulnerable to fire and heavy burden and things like that. So, mind you, Rage is obviously the prime target for that. So I went with the scoring team, which I think ended up being in most games, Minx. Minx was in the roster as well, I think. Maybe she wasn't. Maybe I had Snakeskin. It's quite a while ago. 3 days, mate. That's 3 days. A long time.
Yeah, it's a lifetime. Yep.
3 days. So it was basically Mist, Avarice and Greed, and Gutter in all of the teams. And then I mixed it up either Snakeskin or Decimate, depending on what was happening and who I was fighting against. Against Fish, Snakeskin's really effective because they're all male generally. Whereas against Alchemist, Snakeskin is vulnerable because she's less health, and Vitriol and Calculus are female and can bypass. Yes.
And Vitriol is an absolute murder machine. She's fantastic.
She'll get gone.
Yeah. So what captains were they playing? I mean, did you Corsair? Or?
Yes. So first round was against Corsair, and my opponent was sort of not super experienced. I was able to get an early goal with Mist and then win initiative and then have Rage go in and put the smackdown on. And in the end, I think he managed to get a takeout on Minx or Snakeskin, and I ended up winning 12-2. Corsair was the last victory points I scored. Gutter just was... Oh, Gutter, mate. Scything blows for days.
It's just sad times. It's sad times. Do you feel like losing 12-0 should be the equivalent of, like, not sinking a ball in pool?
Yeah, you should have to do a pants run, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that seems fair.
Round two, I played against Alchemist. I played against a guy called Ben. He was using Midas, Vitriol, Calculus, Decimate, Compound. Pretty standard team.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I was able to score early with Mist. And then I'd set up Rage. Again, it's all about setting up for the next turn. So I dodged with Mist back in to engage Vitriol and won initiative. And so my first activation was actually Avarice to go up and single out Vitriol. And so basically I thought to myself, well, if he goes for Vitriol here and activates her, that's fine because Mist has now got a momentum. Mist can just go retrieve that ball and score a goal. And if he doesn't activate Vitriol, well, then I get to charge her and kill her with Rage. So he did Vitriol and, hit Avarice a couple of times and got up clone. Mist went and scored a goal. So it's 8-0 and I've had, a turn and a half activations. So he then killed Mist and took him off the board, and the ball got kicked out and was landed on Decimate's head. And once again, I brought Mist on in a position where she could charge Decimate, and he had the choice. Does he activate first and save the ball, or does he try and take out another one of my players? And he elected to try and take out Rage, left him alive on 6 or 7 health. And because of Rising Anger, I had 2 momentum. So
go and score.
Yeah, Mist charged Decimate, took the ball and scored. It was 3-0.
Wow. How long was that game? Sounds like it was pretty quick.
15 minutes.
Fuck. Ooh. Was he dark afterwards?
He wasn't wrapped. Old Benny. No, he wasn't stoked with it.
Poor bastard.
He said to me after the game, well, I've never had anyone really play Mist properly into me before, so that was fun. It's like, yeah, Mist is good, eh? The final game was against Dodgy Dave, who was playing Shark Fisherman. This Shark Fisherman is really one of those games that you need to have a plan and sort of have thought about going into the game, because if you let Shark get on top, he will shut the game down and you will not even, you won't get to play the game. you'll basically just sit there moving your models around and not throwing any dice, or not moving your models around if he gut and strings you as well. So I sort of had a plan. I made a small placement error in the first turn, and I let Shark charge Rage. He got two momentum out of it. He obviously didn't choose any damage results, so I didn't get a net result out of that positive. And I used my momentum to score a goal, and I lost the roll, and Shark counter-scored, obviously, but what was more upsetting was that I'd set up Rage for that next activation to charge in and do that damage the same way as I had. I'd put Gutter in and dragged in Jark, and I was going to basically kill a player and go to six. But because I made that placement mistake, he was able to win initiative, score a goal, and gut and string Rage, and it sort of turned the game a little bit, because then when I kicked the ball out, instead of it landing sort of right on Greed where I wanted it, went direction six inches and was suddenly in range for Sakana to walk up and score a goal. Mm. So I had to change my activation order. Instead of doing Gutter, I had to try and retrieve the ball. That allowed Jack to push Gutter off the board with four influence.
Wow.
So all of a sudden I was down 6 points when I was sort of not really thinking I'd be down that many at all. And I had to fight to get back into it. But in the end, I was able to recover the ball. Rage died, which worked in my favor because I was able to bring him on the other side of the board and charge and engaged Sakana and kill him. And I then had the ball on Mist, and Mist was able to slot the goal for a win. Yeah, so it was pretty good. Rage is a fun captain to try and wrap your head around. He's got some sort of good answers to things, and, you know, Quick Time's a cool ability. Furious is a cool ability, and he's sort of a really powerful damage dealer, but unfortunately so is Blackheart, and Blackheart's a lot better at scoring a goal and a lot better in a lot of other facets of the game, so it's a hard choice trying to play Blackheart. Trying to play Rage over Blackheart.
Right. Well, I mean, you proved a point, which was, you know, by the sounds of it, the point of the exercise. So what did Nip say when you pulled out the win?
Oh, well, he lost round one, so he said it wasn't talking to anyone after that.
All right. So should we send him gift baskets, or does he like edible blooms? You know about edible blooms?
Yeah, no, I do know about edible blooms. Yeah. If you could get them shaped like penises, I'm sure he'd fucking love it, mate.
Right, right. This is back to the sausage point, right? He's a
sausage. Sausage.
Loves it. Yeah, I've never met the guy personally. I've spoken to him a few times. He seems all right, you know?
He's fine. He's a good guy, actually. Seems all right. He cops it well. We give him a lot of shit, and he cops it on the chin. He does a good job. Yeah. I've got a lot of time for him.
Well, I mean, you got to admire somebody who can just take that much abuse and just keep trucking.
Don't tell him I said that, by the way.
Wait, no, this is all going to get edited out.
So my question for you is, how does an intermediate player recognize that they're an intermediate player?
Well, I think partly, I can only speak from my own experience, but partly it's getting your ass handed to you 12-0 by somebody when you thought you were actually playing the game all right. You thought you knew what you were doing and you're generally winning games, and suddenly you play somebody who is of a noticeably higher skill level, and, you know, it's like you're not even in the game. You just, you know, you're getting thumped, the ball's getting taken from you, you're not winning the momentum race, I think, is probably one of the key things that I've noticed. So, you know, if I were to point to, I think, a game that you and I played maybe last week, the thing that I started to notice throughout the course of the game was what you just talked about, setting up for the next turn. Maximizing, I guess, your dice pools on any given activation. And I think this is why Avarice might be such a good model, not just because, you know, he gives you that extra activation, but because he actually boosts a dice pool and then lets a whole bunch of models sort of go in on that model and guarantee a takeout and the momentum that comes from it. So, you know, like little things like that, you know, getting your buffs up, making sure you identify, I guess, you know, where your priority targets are, recognizing what has to happen at any given time. Like you talk about loose balls or the opportunity to take out versus score or deny score. I mean, you know, I think somebody who's played the game for a little bit longer would probably go, all right, well, I think I would rather deny 4 points than get 2 points and run the risk of, you know, giving my opponent four.
Yeah.
So, you know, it becomes this kind of game of chess almost, in that you're... whereas previously, I mean, I play quite reactively, and I think that's another point. Whereas previously, you know, you're reacting to what's going on, you know, your opponent moves, you move, your opponent... You actually start to play with a broader gameplay in mind.
So it's interesting when you talk about sort of War Machine and comparing to that, which is obviously one of the areas that I do a lot, because I played a lot of War Machine. But with War Machine, it was very much you had to dangle a piece out to try and entice them into doing something. If you didn't have a threat range advantage, you would have to play a very piece trading type of game. Whereas in this game, because you have a move counter move, you do that on a micro scale. Every single turn that you make an activation, it's a piece trading game. It's like a whole turn in War Machine. And so that example that I used there, where I basically put Mist in range to charge Decimate to get the ball and score a goal, was also a turn where I had four influence on Rage. And his two choices were, do I save the goal or do I take a Rage charge to the face? There was no middle ground. And so that type of situation where you give your opponent no good choices is what you are trying to engender in your turn.
Oh.
You're trying to basically give them a situation where they can't make the right choice, because there is no right choice. There's only the lesser of two evils. And to do that takes a lot of planning the previous turn. I guess the further ahead you can think, the further ahead you can plan, the better results you're going to have during the game.
Hmm. So you mentioned your game against Dan Cam tonight.
Dan Camilleri.
Yep.
Indeed.
And I like the statement that you made about playing into a player who's very good at playing their guild versus
yes.
playing somebody who's not so good, in that
yes.
it completely messes with your idea or your intent to put in place a forward plan. Yeah, I don't know. Did you want to recap?
Yeah, so Dan, so I sort of, as I said, I think about the game a lot. I have a lot of time during the day where I can sort of just left to my own devices, and I can think about, you know, whatever things I want to think about. And so I tend to do a bit of research on guilds and look at, you know, strategies that are being employed. And I guess, you know, but everyone does it, right? Everyone just is passionate about the game and sort of looks up things and thinks about the game. So what I was doing was looking up, the Chisel Missile, and sort of trying to think about ways that I would counter that with the team that I'm currently playing, which is Union. And so I sort of spent the last day and a half formulating a strategy that would work to counter that. And I realized this morning that I hadn't actually played a Mortician's Platter in a long, long time. And I hadn't even really thought about it with you. And so I sent Dan a message asking if he was free to play a game. And I then spent the day today trying to think about, how do I deal with Obulus? How do I deal with the various things? And, you know, when you play against a player that is sort of an average player of their respective guild, you usually have the decision-making process over them. You can usually make better decisions than them, and you'll end up beating them because you've done that. But when you play against someone who is making good decisions and you are making good decisions, then your overall strategy comes down. And if you don't have an overall strategy, you will tend to lose. Now, with Morticians, they sort of diverge from the norm a little bit, in that their overarching strategy is generally very defensive. They tend to be a team that does wait for you to make a mistake and then capitalize on it. And so it's hard, I guess, to build a strategy against that, because you're building on making a mistake and you don't really want to make mistakes. I might be going a little bit too in depth here.
No. So, I think you're right. I have played Morts probably more than any other guild, so I have my own opinion. But like, finish your thought.
So what ended up happening was Dan and I played the game, and he won 12-4. I scored a goal, but he basically controlled the game from turn two onwards. I never got into the game. He was always attacking my targets piecemeal, and he just controlled the game really, really beautifully. It was awesome, because it made me go, okay, cool. I've got to think about Morticians again and start figuring out a plan to play them. And I did actually come up with a plan, which is, based on positioning. But basically, What I was trying to do was play quite deep and quite reactive and wait for them to come forward. But I then basically gave away Blackheart because I was trying to generate some momentum. I think a better way to go about playing Morticians is to jam everything forwards. Not so much that, you do it so that Obulus can grab the first one and, knock, 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 knock. But just a slow, methodical advance across the board with the whole team so that you can't be isolated. And then that allows you to, if Blackheart gets dragged forward 5 inches, Gunner can charge in and generate some momentum and you can start getting into a melee and start making things happen. So, admittedly, I did kick the ball off in that game, and that makes it a lot harder as well against Morticians when they can just control the ball and you have no momentum generation, no additional threat extenders. They're very difficult.
I mean, the other thing with Morticians is that they can extend threat ranges as well, meaning that, they can get off that critical first, I guess, momentum generating activation through Obulus having Puppet Master, either extending one of his models' threat ranges or dragging one of yours in, putting it in a bad position so that it's set up for another play to go in on.
Long story short, you need to have a strategy for every team, and in some ways you need to have a strategy for nearly every player as well, because there's so much nuance and depth to the game.
It is a fantastic game. It is a fantastic game. They have done a very good job. Did you want to talk about Hunters a bit? Because I know, I've struggled with getting my head around them, and I know there's some guys in our meta who play them, given that they're quite new. But they're not an easy team to play. They're quite hard to, I guess, get humming. And my experience has been when things go wrong with them, they go really wrong. And it's hard to recover. Like, you talk about recovering in a number of your games, but it's hard to recover from a bad position with them. It seems to cascade. Do you have any advice for people?
Hunters are a great team. They're a lot of fun to play, but they're a very synergistic team, and it's probably a team that I would strongly advise against newer players trying to pick up and learn. You sort of need to have strong fundamentals in the game to understand how the game works before you can really get, effective results out of them, because they don't really specialize in goal scoring and they don't really specialize in taking players out, with various exceptions. But as a general rule, they're sort of more of a control team, a bit like the way that the Morticians are. And that can be difficult. They're also a team that doesn't play in a momentum race. You rarely get into a momentum race with Hunters. It doesn't happen, because your momentum is a resource that you're having to use throughout the turn to get yourself the same sort of, or I guess their momentum is a resource that they leverage in a different way rather than trying to use it to win first activation. So when I play Hunters, I'm trying to, daisy chain a number of things to try and achieve an end result. And that end result is usually deliver JCAR to someone's face, or deliver Egret to a goal scoring position, or deliver Cena into a position where he can target a snared knockdown model and start doing Rapopolises and get that mad stuff happening. But the way you have to do that is you have to build the turn, and they've got a lot of little tools that you can use to help you do that. Like, Pinned is a really strong ability. It is very high cost. The Forest Jump from Hearn is a way for you to generate some momentum, and then also retreat from dangerous positions. You've got to really play a dynamic hit-and-run style game, and placing down traps to deny your opponent activations. Like, if you put down a trap with JCAR and it's engaging sort of within an inch of two different models that haven't yet activated, one of those models has to take snared and bleed. And what's more annoying for the opponent is they can't basically trigger that, then clear the momentum, and then continue their advance. So the snared penalty happens during the entirety of their movement. So you can actually deny someone's threat range by doing that. Of course, they can counter that by having someone else trigger the trap, or they can sometimes do a dodge, which will then let them clear the condition and then move. But there's lots of cool little things that you can do with, I guess, with the traps to try and...
And I think it goes to your earlier example of forcing people into bad decisions, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted to do something else with that model. Now that critical model that they really want to get in has to contemplate how to get around the movement debuff from Snared.
Yeah.
You know,
if you can sort of look at what your opponent's trying to do and figure out ways to stuff that up, and we played a game recently that was a good example where you had Philip, you'd load her up with 6 influence, and I was like, yep, I'm going to stop you from doing anything with Philip by shooting you with a pinned and then moving to behind one of your models that had already activated so that you literally had no way of targeting my model.
Oh.
And that's sort of, as I said, they're a control faction.
Oh.
And so you have to utilize their control aspects to leverage actual victory points.
Yeah.
That's the tricky part.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not easy.
No.
I mean, I take your point on Pinned. I mean, it's a great tool. The Forest is a great tool. And even though, you know, Chaska's not my favorite hunter, you know, I played one game where Theron got pinned up on a player. That player was loaded up with influence and probably wanted to go later in the turn. Forest in front of him, Chaska comes in as the next activation, pushes him behind the forest so that now he's in a position where, you know, he's got no line of sight, he's only got one direction, and he suddenly wasted 4 influence on this player that was loaded up and ready to do some damage. So, you know, I just find it's like, you know, you look at Obulus's control, and it's a hard control. Like, he says, I will spend 4 I will do
and
this.
And you can't do that, yeah, exactly.
Whereas Theron's control, the Hunter's control, is a softer form of that, and it's fragile in that, you know, there are ways to get around it, or it's more likely to go wrong sometimes.
What you'll find that's different between the Hunters and the Morticians with Obulus and his control, yeah, he's very direct control, but he puts a lot of resources into doing that, and Hunters don't actually have to do that. Hunters can put a lot less resources into doing a lot of things. You just have to think about the activation order. And this is one thing that I've said to a number of players, which I think sort of spaced them out a bit, was I said I very rarely activate Theron first in a turn. Because for me, it's much more effective for Theron to be receiving a blessing and using, I guess, a three influence point for nothing, rather than going first and maybe getting a blessing out on someone who's perhaps not going to do it as effectively.
Mm.
And that, for me, was the moment I started getting much better results out of Hunters, was I was using Hearn first and getting the blessing up from Hearn and getting singled out and getting a momentum up and having Hearn sort of either teleport into a forest and buy an attack and then walk away, or walk and then teleport out to a forest. And basically, yeah, hit and run, trying to move up, trying to annoy them with positioning. And
Which makes sense thematically as well. Like, it fits with the theme. Go in, go out. Not always easy, though. Like, sometimes
fuck no. They're a knife's edge team. You spend the whole game on a knife's edge trying to balance, because you almost always activate second. And that's okay against some teams, but against Butchers or Fish, activating second can be a death sentence. So you've really got to have a plan developed for how you're going to stop that. And the way you allocate your influence is absolutely vital to try and neuter what their first play is going to be.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. I think we can all take something away from that.
Oh, yes. There's something in that for all of us, I think.
Thanks, Uncle Trent.
You're welcome.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Because I don't have
anything else. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I think that's pretty, pretty good. Like, that's been some pretty fucking meaty stuff right there.
I'm just not sure, like, how... It's there's so many concepts that are so interlinked in describing, I guess, I don't like the term, but describing high level strategies in these sorts of games. There's so many thought processes that are interlinked.
Well, here's something that came up in that last sort of discussion about Hunters. You talk about them being a team that requires knowledge of fundamentals. Did you want to elaborate on the types of fundamentals that are relevant to playing a team like that?
Sure. So when I say fundamentals, I'm not talking about fundamentals of you know, roll three dice to pass a ball. I'm talking about the fundamentals of placement, the fundamentals of utilizing the ball as a resource to improve your position. I'm talking about the fundamentals of crowding to gain benefits, the trying to stack modifiers in your favor, the fundamentals of knowing what playbook results to choose and when to use a counterattack and when to use a defensive stance, those sorts of fundamentals. They're the ones that the hunters need to really have a good grasp on, because they are so reliant on getting those things right, particularly your pass dodges, your momentous teamwork plays. Someone like Jaykar, Egret, if you can pass them a ball and dodge them and get them an extra 4 inches of movement, what that can do for their threat range, both as a goal-scoring threat but also as a way to put out poison, you know, from a flurry on someone that they weren't expecting to get flurried, swift striking forwards into range, and then sort of dodging around to retrieve a ball that they weren't expecting that you're able to get to. Like, lots of little things like that, little placement positioning things, way to utilize cover effectively. If you're not doing those with hunters, if you're not utilizing the terrain, and you are going to get fucking wrecked.
Yeah. No, cover's a good point, isn't it? Because you sort of, you know, messing with those dice pools by one can be quite significant. You know,
when you're talking about as I was saying before, you're trying to achieve specific results from your playbook, and you're trying to deny your opponent specific results from a playbook. One dice can be the difference between a knockdown or a double dodge and, you know, one damage. And when you can then go, cool, well, Jaykar will counterattack and double dodge out, or, you know, all of a sudden your model's snared because it was Theron making a counterattack, and lots of things like that. It's, quite complicated to, as I said, there's so many things that sort of, correlate with each other in terms of it's a war game that has a lot of complexity.
Yeah, deceptively so. I think, and that's really the strength of the game. You know, you're very easy to get into, very difficult to master, and that's all the best games really when you think about it. Well, look, I think I'm probably out of questions, and that's probably a good place to wrap. So,
Rap City bitch, Rap City bitch. See ya.
Bye. And we're back. That was a great chat with Deno.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Got a lot to say though, doesn't he?
He does. And you know what? He's equally happy to give you advice as he is to insult you.
Absolutely. I learned a lot from that, actually. No, it's good.
That's good. I think that's why we're doing it, right?
Yes, you know? Indeed.
So, I think that probably wraps up the show. Until next time.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed it,
Ken. I enjoyed it. Well, that's all that matters, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you had a good time?
Indeed. I'll be back next week.
Excellent. I don't think this is going to work without you, mate.
Fantastic. Well, that's what I want to hear. I don't think it's going to work without you.
Well.
So I think we should give a little plug again to our sponsors. So, I mean, the big one is basically Big Daz, Daryl from NerdvanaGamesSA.com for all your Guild Ball needs. You can look him up.
And you can find us on Twitter. I am Random Scrub @scrub_random.
Far out. That's a mouthful, Rand. And you can find me at Stubby Holders, and that's the Australian item that you put a beer in to keep your beer cold.
Yes, it's a noble and patriotic tradition.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We love our beer like we love our families here. Actually, beer is family. Beer is love.
Mine are all sleeping in their story holder.
Look at you. Hey, did you want to give a shout out to anybody?
You've put me on the spot here. I don't know. Is there anyone I should be shouting out to that I haven't?
Well, I would like to throw a shout out to our Australian counterparts over at Protect Your Balls.
Nipscast.
Yep. Hello to Nips.
Fantastic. Yep. Hello to Nips. I think there is someone else. I mean, I think we do mention it in our Carball episode, but we have got some people over in Florida, I believe, who we like to send penguin pictures to.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So Mary from TKO.
TKO. Yep.
I don't know about you, man, but I'm quite fond of Mary. She seems like a nice girl.
I think it's a great podcast. I love listening to it. So yeah, they're all good.
Except for Gabe.
Well, maybe we can get Gabe on then. Okay, so this is a shout out to Gabe. You know, send us a line. We'll get you on, and we'll have a chat about all things not Guild Ball and just abusive, you know, back and forth.
I feel it would be more like mediation. Like you're going to have to act as the mediator between us.
No, I'm fine with that. We can do this.
All right. So hashtag Team Peckman.
Yep.
Hashtag sausage. And yeah, hit us up on Twitter if you want to have a chat, throw abuse, or just give us some feedback. We'd be happy to hear from you. And I guess we will talk to you next time.
That's us out. See you later.
See ya.
Bye.